From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
We are on a high alert from the seven fronts which we're facing Iran with. We're on extremely high alert. We know that this is a genocidal, murderous, fascist state.
That was David Mincer, spokesperson at the National Public Diplomacy Directorate in Israel, following an airstrike that took out a top Hamas leader who was visiting Tehran. Israel has not claimed responsibility for the elimination of the terrorist leader. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. We'll get more on the increasingly volatile situation in the Middle East that many experts believe is on the verge of a much wider conflict, from Carolyn Glick, senior contributing editor at the Jewish News Syndicate, later in the program. Yesterday, the new acting director of the Secret Service, Ronald Rowe, once again acknowledged the agency's failure.
One of my first actions as acting director was traveling to the Butler Farm Show site to better understand how our protection failed. I went to the roof of the AGR building where the assailant fired shots, and I laid in a prone position to evaluate his line of sight. What I saw made me ashamed. As a career law enforcement officer and a 25-year veteran with the Secret Service, I cannot defend why that roof was not better secured.
We'll talk with South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham in just a moment. As the Olympics continue this week, tainted by the blasphemous opening and now tangled in controversy over men and women's boxing, the issue of men and women's sports is moving toward a confrontation here in the United States. Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall is appealing a ruling by a federal district court that says the Biden administration's new Title IX rules, changing the definition of sex, must proceed in America's schools. Why does this matter? We're going to talk with FRC's Meg Kilgannon in just a moment. When we discuss the dangerous state of the world, it means that people are in danger. Oftentimes, it's innocent women and children. Victor Marks of All Things Possible Ministries has fearlessly led missions into Gaza, Iraq, Syria, and Southeast Asia to help the helpless. He joins me later to talk about what manhood and Christianity should look like in our modern day. All of that and more coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, if you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, I encourage you to do so. You can find it in the App Store. Not only will you be able to watch Washington Watch, but you can get our daily Bible study, Stand on the Word, as well as the Washington Stand news feed. Again, that's in the App Store, the Stand Firm app. At a Senate hearing yesterday, Acting Secret Service Director Ronald Rowe acknowledged the massive failure of the Secret Service, which enabled the recent assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. But he defended his agency's refusal to fire any of the agents involved in the planning and response to the assassination attempt of the former president, claiming he did not want to, quote, rush to judgment. While drawing harsh words from multiple senators, Acting Director Rowe also disclosed discoveries regarding possible social media accounts that belonged to the shooter. The question is, are we getting closer to answers or just more questions? Joining me now by phone to discuss this, as well as the latest on the intensifying conflict in the Middle East, is Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. He serves on four Senate committees, including the Senate Judiciary Committee, where he's the ranking member. Senator Graham, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony, very much.
Well, give me first your take on yesterday's hearing with the acting director of the Secret Service. New revelations? Did you get questions answered, or did it just raise more questions?
Well, I mean, how many more questions do you need to ask before somebody needs to get fired? I mean, the system failed. It's a massive system failure. Individual members of the Secret Service, the president's protective detail, rushed to his aid as quick as they could. But everything failed. How can you get within 130 yards of the president and get eight rounds off from a rooftop unsecured, a 20-year-old guy without any military training? So if people are not fired, it will happen again. The only deterrence that really matters in these things is for people to lose their job if you're in the military and you did this, you'd probably be court-martialed. So I'm looking for some decisive action. But having said that, I'd like to have more Secret Service agents, not less. They've reduced their force by about 300 and something in the last few years. And clearly, they need more people with better training and change the system. But one thing that struck me is that this would-be assassin had social media accounts connected to overseas entities, and we can't get into them. And that, to me, is a problem for our nation.
What role did politics play in this, in the decision for security, the additional requests that were made for former President Trump? Are you convinced that this was just a system failure, or was it a failure because politics were injected into it?
I don't know if there were resources denied. I have no evidence to suggest that there's a political decision to not resource President Trump because of his politics. But, you know, how smart do you have to be to understand that this failed at every level? I mean, isn't it stunning? Tony, I still can't quite absorb what happened here. A 20-year-old guy with no military training, apparently, flew a drone that was undetected before the, before the event. People saw him up on the roof, and, you know, he got 8 shots off. I mean, it's stunning that the level of the system failure. And if people don't lose their job over this, what would get you fired, Secret Service?
Well, I think you're going to have definitive action because already, you know, the conspiracy theories are churning. And I think we've got to get answers quickly because that only further divides this country and makes the upcoming election even more volatile.
I couldn't agree with you more. But the point I do want to reinforce here is that this guy was on social media, and I don't know who he was talking to, but they're encrypted apps, and they apparently have some connection overseas. Again, I don't think anybody would hire this guy. That'd be just hard to believe. But having said that, you know, what if you had a pedophile ring at your broke and you get warrants for, you know, their social media devices and you can't get into them? I mean, this is a problem for terrorism and crime and sort of a wake-up call. I hope we can find a way to fix it. You know what they've done with these phones? They've given them to the Israelis, hoping they can break the encryption.
Well, that's a great transition to my next topic that I want to discuss with you, Senator Graham, and that is Israel. Iran has vowed a response to the killing of a Hamas leader in Tehran. We also have the elimination of a Hezbollah leader in Lebanon. Are we on the verge of a much wider conflict in the region?
If we don't change our policy, yes. And here's what Israel did. They killed a man in Lebanon who had a $5 million bounty on his head because he was involved in the Beirut bombing back in the 80s, killing Marines. So he's been a known terrorist for decades, $5 million bounty on his head by the United States, you know, a high-up Hezbollah guy, and they killed him in Lebanon. Well, what did we do with bin Laden? We took him out in Pakistan. You know, Israel has a policy. We will hunt you down. No matter what you do, no matter how long it takes, we're coming after you if you try to kill Israelis. And yesterday, what happened? You had a Hamas leader, the political leader of Hamas, been involved with Hamas in the leadership since 2017. You'll never convince me he didn't have anything to do with October the 7th. He was taken out in Iran where he was paying homage to the new Iranian president, who was being sworn in their parliament, their version of parliament. And during the swearing in, they were chanting death to Israel, death to America. So he was up in Tehran paying homage, and I don't know if Israel took him out. Something happened to him. Let's just say this. I put a bill in today that says if Hezbollah attacks Israel, it should be considered an attack by Iran against Israel. I'm tired to play this charade. When Hezbollah attacks Israel, Hamas attacks Israel, that's Iran attacking Israel. So I would urge Israel to go after Iran if Hezbollah responds here, take down their oil refineries. I would urge the American government to get behind Israel, defend themselves against Iran. That's what I would urge.
Senator, I want to play a clip from last week's speech by by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. You were in the chamber. I was sitting not far back from where you were. Play clip number two, please.
And one more thing. When Israel acts to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons that could destroy Israel and threaten every American city, every city that you come from, we're not only protecting ourselves, we're protecting you.
Senator, he didn't say if, he said when.
Okay, so I did two things today. I'm trying to avoid having the war escalate, and there's only one way to achieve that goal. If you let Iran know that they will be responsible for the actions of Hezbollah if they attack Israel, that you would go after Iranian oil refineries, not just targets in Lebanon, I think they would calm Hezbollah down if they know they're on the target list. As to their nuclear program, I introduced legislation today authorizing the use of military force by the United States if the president determines that Iran is about to break out regarding their nuclear weapon ambitions. Now, why did I do that today? I read the Director of National Intelligence report that's required every 6 months. It was a year late. Detailing the status of the Iranian nuclear program regarding enrichment of uranium and plutonium and the development of a delivery system. I was so unnerved by what I saw, I introduced legislation authorizing the use of military force by the United States to stop an Iranian breakout toward a nuclear weapon. BB is right. Anything they do to deny Iran a nuclear weapon makes us safer, but we can't outsource our own security to Israel. So I did that today, Tony, because I've never been more worried about the Ayatollah sprinting toward a bomb than I am right now.
When you look back to April, when there was a direct attack by Iran on Israel, we've kind of crossed that threshold where it's not just proxies anymore. So if they have a nuclear weapon, once they have it, it would seem that they're much more aggressive in their posture, not just toward Israel, but potentially other countries in the region.
Well, look at North Korea. They have nuclear capability, and it's, you know, sort of an insurance policy. Now, the difference, I think, between North Korea and China and Iran is they're religious Nazis. Their goal is to spread their version of Shia Islam throughout the Mideast, drive us out of the region, and destroy the state of Israel because they're commanded to do so by God. Their religion requires them to kill the Jews and come after us. If they get a nuclear weapon, it'd be like the Nazis having a nuclear weapon. They will use it. Israel right. cannot afford to get this wrong. And I am telling everybody in the Senate and the House, you need to go read this report about the status of Iran's nuclear program. Israel will not allow this without one hell of a fight. If the Ayatollah ever got a nuclear weapon, he would use it because he's a religious fanatic and a religious Nazi.
Right.
So we live in very dangerous times, and the Arabs would respond by getting their own nuclear weapon. Then you're on the road to Armageddon. So we need to make sure that we stand with Israel and we also protect ourselves. Not only was Bibi right saying that going after their nuclear program in Iran would make us safer, we should put it on our list of things
right.
to do as well.
Senator Lindsey Graham, out of time, but it's always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you. Pray for our friends in Israel. God
we
bless.
Are. We are. And folks, if you have not yet signed our petition of support for presidential candidates, text support to 67742. When we come back, more Washington Watch. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com. newsreflects.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. Always great to have you with us. Be sure and check out the website, tonyperkins.com. Get the Stand Firm app. And you can actually have community on the Stand Firm app. All right, I was mentioning this on the way out, the petition to all presidential candidates calling upon them to stand with Israel. Now, I think you heard from my conversation with Senator Graham the need, how volatile the situation is and how American leadership is needed right now in a very real way. Text the word support to 67742 and you can sign that petition. That's support to 67742. In fact, we're going to continue our conversation a little bit later with Carolyn Glick about what's happening in Israel. But for now, I want to talk about this. After a string of court victories scoring injunctions against the Biden administration's radical Title IX rewrite, which basically redefines the word sex, a federal court yesterday in Alabama actually struck down an attempt by the states of Alabama, Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina to halt enforcement of those rules before they go into effect tomorrow. Now, that's different than what we've seen in other courts. So we've got a confrontation coming. This is going to end up before the Supreme Court. Just don't know if it's going to happen in time before school starts. But there's another case. And it's a different lawsuit. A federal judge has ordered that the Title IX rewrite be blocked from any school with a parent who belongs to the group Moms for Liberty. Now, this list includes more than 2,000 schools in 45 states. So how's that going to work out? Joining me now to discuss this, Meg Kilgannon, Senior Fellow for Education Studies here at the Family Research Council. She served in the Department of Education during the Trump administration. Meg, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me.
So a disappointing outcome for Alabama. Of course, the attorney general there, Steve Marshall, says he is going to appeal. But we've got other school districts, other states that have achieved a stay on these rules. So what's the latest?
Well, the latest is we have breaking news on Washington Watch today. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. The plaintiffs in the Alabama case appealed to the 11th Circuit, and they were granted an emergency injunction. So the rule that goes into effect tomorrow by the Biden administration will not have to be enforced in Alabama, South Carolina, Florida, or Georgia. So this was for a preliminary injunction. And it was for relief against having to enforce this rule before it is argued in court. So this is really great news. They had a win for about 24 hours in the Biden administration, and now they are back on defense.
So to be clear, when a court issues a stay or an injunction against a policy, that means that the plaintiff has a good chance of succeeding in their court case.
That's right. That is right. And so this decision that happened before the injunction was, this judge wrote a 122-page decision, and it was, I haven't read it yet, but I'm told that it was sort of creative in its effort to save this rule and to prevent this being enforced. We've seen a lot of creative legal strategies in this regard on Title IX.
Kind of like the creative definitions of sex. I mean, we've kind of taken everything, and it's very elastic. So, you know, when words don't mean anything, and when truth eludes us, I mean, how can you ever come to an agreement where it's just people will make up whatever they want to make up?
That's right. And they are ignoring the fact that sex at the time of the Title IX original rule being the original title being put into effect, sex meant male or female.
Right.
There was none of this other imagineering on the definition of sex. So this is a big overstep by the Biden administration, but this is a big overstep in many school districts across the country. Just because your school does not have to enforce this rule does not mean that they don't already have a policy that is essentially this rule in reality in your school, even in red states. So this is something that parents really need to be vigilant about, monitoring your school and making sure that this isn't happening where you live.
Especially in a red state where you happen to be in a major city where they've attracted kind of liberal administrators, this could very well be the policy. In fact, some of these schools were wanting the federal government to make this decision or make this, you know, proposed rule. Therefore, they could get the heat off of them and say, oh, we had to do it. So how do parents, you know, what should they do to find out what the policy is and what can they do about it?
Well, you should have on your school's website a way to search the website. And if you search for Title IX, there should be a Title IX person at your school who's responsible for enforcing Title IX, and you can email that person and ask them the question directly. There may be more explicit statements of support on the school's website, but if they're not there, you can do that. But I want to remind viewers too what you mentioned at the top of the segment, which was that the case that involved Moms for Liberty and Young America's Foundation and Female Athletes United. If any of the schools in your state have a chapter of one of those groups, then your students are protected. If they have a membership in your school, that's in your state, so there is a lot of relief from this rule, but which is great, and we're very happy to see that. But it doesn't preclude, for example, where I live in Fairfax County, the students in Fairfax are not protected from any of this. Because Fairfax has this policy already. They didn't need the Biden administration to tell them to do this. So you need to find out in your school, are they already pursuing these kinds of policies or not? And we hope that the answer is no.
So the battle for sanity continues, and it's going to be up to moms and dads and concerned citizens across the country to know what's going on. And then once they know what is happening, step forward to make a difference if need be. This would be a great reason to run for a school board to
make
sure these
types. It is a wonderful reason.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sure these types of policies do not come into your school and affect your children. Meg Gilgannon, always great to see you. Thanks so much for pitch hitting and coming in today and playing a little sports.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Meg Gilgannon. We're looking at another story, breaking news out of the Fifth Circuit today, well, actually yesterday, where the Biden administration lost there as well when it came to Texas and their efforts on the border. We may cover that tomorrow. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about masculinity and manhood. What's that look like for a Christian in this day with all of the challenges, all of the dangers? Victor Marks joins me next. Don't go away.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
This is Washington Watch. Download the Stand Firm app today, and you'll have Washington Watch with you no matter where you go. You also get the Stand on the Word daily devotional. Find that all at Stand Firm at the App Store. As a humanitarian who has rescued women and children in Iraq, Syria, North Africa, and Southeast Asia, Victor Marks has long embraced situations calling for courage. But he believes all men can find courage and strength to stand up to the challenges in their lives from a biblical perspective. With his new book, The Dangerous Gentleman, he lays out a battle plan for men to lead the fight to rebuild our culture, families, and churches, along with stories of his life's journey. Joining me now to discuss this, Victor Marks, founder of All Things Possible. Victor, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Great to be here.
And Semper Fi.
Semper Fi, brother.
So, you have gone into some really dangerous places. In fact, you were in Gaza shortly after Israel began fighting back to rescue different ones. You've been in different parts of the country rescuing women and children. Talk a little bit about why you do that and where you've been.
Well, I'd say, first, it's a calling. And second, God has ordained us with great teams, great intelligence, and supporters and people who pray for us to allow us to do this without any red tape from governments. So we've been helping those who've been marginalized or abused or taken as sex captives. I mean, the last one we did, because I have people ask me all the time, so was this when you were like in your 30s? And I kind of snicker and go, actually, no. 18, 19 times overseas, we have a safe house in Iraq, where we were doing so much of this. But our last one was just 4 months ago, and that was in Iraq, Syria, Turkey region. And we rescued a young woman who had been held captive for 9 years, two babies in captivity as a sex slave. And we were able to plan it out for 6 months, execute it in 5 days. And the team was incredible. And I'm actually proud to say that my wife was the point person to make first contact with the young woman. So, yeah, it's what we're called to. But, you know, when we're doing stuff and seeing so much fruit overseas and we started doing stuff here, my big concern and the reason why I wrote the book, Dangerous Gentleman, is I'm just surprised by the level of fear among men here in the U.S., especially young men. So that's why I said, well, I think we better start investing in our young men and men in the U.S. real quick, or, you know, there's going to be a price to pay.
You know, Victor, people ask me a lot of times, you know, Tony, what keeps you up at night? You know, what is it you worry about most, you know, in our nation's capital? You know, is it, you know, nuclear war? Is it this or that? You know, what concerns me most is the lack of courage, of moral courage that I see in our leaders and in our men. And that they're as you said, they're fearful. It's not just physical fear, but there's fear of the, you know, the social media, fear of politics, fear of being left out. And as a result, we're lacking that courage to not just rescue people overseas, which, you know, certainly takes another level of courage, but even to stand for truth in our culture.
Yeah, and I would say getting a spine or backbone, you know, a lot of my angst has been with the church in the U.S. that has propagated this really false sense of spirituality by behavior modification, which makes men passive. Like somehow you're more spiritual if you're passive and or don't resist. That's nonsense. And, you know, Jesus is both known as the Lion and the Lamb. So it's time for men in churches to stand up and go, yeah, our faith and action should look different socially, both in the political realm and even just like your last segment, you know, with school boards. It's a sad state of affairs when men are still quiet about kids having things cut off of them, hormones, trying to change their gender. I just go, at what point is enough enough?
Right. So the book, Dangerous Gentlemen, let's talk about the book. How can people get this book? What is it kind of, what does it lead people through? What will men get when they get this book?
Well, they'll get some tools, and, you know, most men, and I kind of follow Jesus's approach of storytelling. Now, these are things that we've done, been through, that I hope will inspire and encourage men to step out of the apathy of where you're at. There's a difference between, and is an extreme of toxic masculinity versus this feminism that's going on in manhood. And I think the Dangerous Gentleman is right down the middle. Which you said in the opening, it's moral masculinity that we need more than ever. And women need it. Single women out there are dying for it. Like, where are the men that will protect and provide? So the book, many stories of me and teammates doing things that, trust me, men listening, I'm just an ordinary fella that learned how to tap into God's will for my life to do extraordinary things. And that's available for everyone there.
Right.
Yeah. So you don't have to go overseas to get stuff done.
So where can folks get a copy of the book?
Yeah. Anywhere books are sold, Amazon.com. And there's a website, thedangerousgentleman.com, or Victor Marks with an X. And I tell folks this, if you're a guy out there and you're just struggling so bad you can't even afford it, contact me through my website. I'll make sure you get a copy.
And I know you will, because you're a very generous man as well as a dangerous gentleman. All right, Victor Marks, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll encourage people to get a copy of that, men to get a copy of that book.
Great.
All right, folks, stick with us. We're coming back with more Washington Watch on the other side of the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
To this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And let me again remind you, we're going to be talking about it here in this last segment, but if you've not yet signed our petition to all presidential candidates calling upon them to support Israel, to stand with Israel, I want to encourage you to do that. We're going to be delivering those soon. Simply text the word support to 67742, 67742, and if you're not already convinced that we need to do that, well, I think my next interview is going to help convince you that America needs to stand with Israel, not only for the sake of Israel and the United States, but really for the entire world. But first, our word for today comes from Psalm 90. So teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. I'm sure you've been to a cemetery where the gravestones have born, followed by a date, and then a dash, and the date they died. The shortness of life is summed up in that dash. So, Lord, teach us. Give us godly wisdom and understanding to number our days so that we can make the most of our lives. Moses, the author of this psalm, continues, says, "Oh, satisfy us early with your mercy that we may rejoice and be glad all our days." Then he writes this in verse 17, "And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands for us." Yes, establish the work of our hands. This is God's blessing. Establish the work of our passing hands. Make our lives count for eternity. To find out more about our journey through the Bible and to join us for a daily devotional, simply text the word Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. Earlier today, Hamas's political leader, Ismail Haniyeh, was killed in Iran just hours after an Israeli strike in Lebanon killed a senior Hezbollah commander there. Now, these attacks come after the Iranian proxy Hezbollah killed 12 children with rocket strikes in northern Israel on Saturday. What will be the timing and location of the near simultaneous attacks on the two leading Israeli enemies means as what does that mean as Israel continues its war against Hamas? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Carolyn Glick. She's a senior contributing editor at the Jewish News Syndicate and host of Carolyn Glick Show on JNS. Carolyn, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you on the program.
Always great to be with you, Tony.
So, Carolyn, I'm going to ask you first just to walk us through the events of the last 4 days.
All right. So, you know, what Israel is, we saw Prime Minister Netanyahu in Washington last week giving his speech before the joint houses of Congress. And then he met with President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris and had difficult meetings, as Kamala Harris made very clear in her uncoordinated statement after her meeting with Netanyahu, where she called for an immediate ceasefire in the war. And then Netanyahu traveled on to Florida, where he met with former President Trump before being called back to Israel immediately, because on Saturday afternoon, Israel time, we had Hezbollah massacred 12 children in Israel, in the community of Majd el Shams in the Golan Heights, who were on a, were playing on a soccer field in the town. And so Netanyahu came back to Israel several hours early and had been ensconced with his cabinet basically since he landed. And what we saw on the ground was, in fact, the assassination of Fuad Shukr, who was the Hezbollah chief of staff of their terror forces in Lebanon. He was Hassan Nasrallah, Hezbollah's chief's military advisor. He was responsible for all their precision-guided missiles and for all of their strikes, all of their missile strikes against Israel, including the one that killed the children on Saturday afternoon. Later in the day, we got the report that Hamas's leader, Ismail Haniyeh, who had moved from the military leader in Gaza, where he served for many years as a terror master on the ground, to the head of their political Politburo that's located in Qatar, in Doha, some years ago. And he was leader of Hamas. He was assassinated at a guest house run by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps in Tehran after attending the inauguration of Iran's new president and meeting with Iranian dictator Ali Khamenei, both in Tehran. Israel is not taking credit for the Haniyeh strike. It is taking credit for the Hezbollah strike, but that's a distinction that may or may not make that much of a difference, because obviously it's being attributed to Israel and not, for instance, to Micronesia or Luxembourg or any of the other usual suspects in these issues. So these were both highly significant moves. And Netanyahu gave us a press conference or a press statement this evening, his first since the events of Tuesday, where he did not speak about Haniyeh, but he spoke about the fact that Israel is going to continue, just as Israel attacked the Houthi port of Hodeidah after they struck a missile into Tel Aviv, about 100 yards from the former American embassy in Tel Aviv, the current American consulate there, and killing an Israeli. Israel attacked a very important strategic site for the Houthis, which is still on fire over a week later. And they attacked in Beirut, and they attacked and killed Hamas's chief of staff, Mohammed Def, inside of Gaza about 3 weeks ago. So that's what he took credit for about an hour ago in Israel. And the Haniyeh thing is sort of hanging out there.
All right, Carolyn, I want to break these down. First off, I just have to say the Israeli intelligence is remarkable and able to track these individuals. And so really two significant events. And as you said, the Israelis have not taken credit for the attack in Tehran. So you have in Beirut, you have a Hamas leader, or you have a Hezbollah leader that is taken out. Now, he's an operational leader. This is quite significant. This is going toward the head of the snake, although Iran is the head of the snake. But this is a little snake. So that has to be a setback for Hezbollah in their work against Israel. But then when you go to Tehran, I mean, this is Iran is the big. I mean, that's the head of the snake. And you see these proxies like Hamas and Hezbollah to strike this in the Haniyeh, who was there in Tehran, who I think has been a part of the negotiations for the ceasefire. Now, this is quite significant, and I think sends a strong message to Tehran that no one is going to be under your shelter that we want to eliminate.
That's right. And I mean, just as Israel signaled its capabilities to operate up, you know, in Iran after Iran committed the missile assault on Israel in April, Israel made clear that it's capable of hitting every site by air in Iran, including its nuclear installation. So Israel didn't hit them because it was under tremendous pressure from the United States not to. But the strikes that it did carry out knocked out the anti-aircraft guns that were protecting the nuclear targets, et cetera. So that was a demonstration of capabilities. And here, assuming that Haniyeh was, in fact, killed by Israel, you know, he was under the protection of the IRGC north of Tehran. He wasn't in a major hotel. He was being hidden, effectively, and they were able to— and he was assassinated while under the protection of the IRGC. This shows, you know, that Israel can basically take out anybody anytime it wants to in Iran. So it's not only intelligence capability, it's also operational capability on the ground in Iran.
Now, the Iranians have responded that it is their duty to take revenge against Israel for this hit of the individual of Haniyeh that was staying in their guest home, as they put it. But I want to play a short clip of David Mercer, spokesman for the National Public Diplomacy Directorate, earlier today addressing the issue of what may come next.
We are on a high alert from the seven fronts which we're facing Iran with. We're on extremely high alert. We know that this is a genocidal, murderous, fascist state.
Have to imagine there's an anticipation of a retaliatory strike by Iran, or at least through one of their proxies.
I mean, there are two things to take into account. You know, first of all, is that Israel's athletes now in the Olympics, participating in the Olympics in Paris, have already been under, since the very outset of the Games last week, they've been under unprecedented amount of security guarding, you know, their protection. And today Israel augmented that still further, giving a personal bodyguard to every Israeli athlete. And so they're very much at risk in Paris, and there's a lot of concern about them because that's a very vulnerable position.
And don't forget that after the Olympics, there's a history there, too, with the Olympics.
Precisely, and we also have the Paralympics. We have the Paralympics after the regular Olympics, where Israel tends to win a lot of gold medals because we have so many wounded veterans who do so well in so many of the sports there. And so, you know, we have a lot to be concerned about in Paris, but all Israeli representative legations throughout the world have upped their security tremendously. So that's one thing. But we also have to remember that Israel has always been the most threatened country. And certainly over the past 10 months, Israeli embassies, consulates throughout the world have been subjected to threats and to attacks, whether by, you know, radical leftists or Islamists on the streets in London and in other places. So, you know, this is just a heightened alert. You know, one of the things that I find weird, I understand, is now a term of art in American politics for some reason. But one of the things that's most sort of remarkable that we're facing is that the United States keeps saying, well, we don't want, you know, if Israel is attacked this way or that. Israel has been under continuous attack for the past 9 months from Hezbollah in Lebanon, and obviously from Hamas, and then from the Houthis, and from Iran, and from Iran's militias in Iraq and in Syria and in Judea and Samaria and so on and so forth. So Israel has been attacked from seven fronts by Iran and its proxies directly and indirectly for 9 months. And so this idea that there's this tit for tat going on and that we're not already at war and that we're not already at heightened alert is part of a word game that is being led really by the United States under the Biden-Harris administration to try to, you know, portray this as some sort of at every moment, after every, you know, secrete assault on Israel by Iran and its proxies along all of these fronts, we have to decide whether we're going to follow suit. We're at war. You know, nobody ever asked after any secrete battle in Europe in World War II or in the Pacific or in any battle, in any war, okay, so now they attacked you. Are you going to do something? We're at war. Of course we're going to do something. We haven't won yet. So there's this whole effort to try to deny reality when it relates to the fact that Israel's in an ongoing regional war against Iran and all of its regional proxies that are all attacking Israel and have been attacking Israel with various degrees of intensity, but always on the attack since October 7th.
What's the mood on the streets of Israel as you look back over the last week, Benjamin Netanyahu being here in the United States, speaking to a joint session of Congress, very forceful, strong message, and then these events that we've just been describing. What is the sense? Has the resolve? I mean, it was already there. Is it deepening? What's the sense?
Well, it's sort of a roller coaster because, yes, you always have very deep resolve among Israelis. You know, over two-thirds of Israelis say that the only important thing is victory. It's more important than national unity. It's more important than anything. We need to win this war. And that's been consistent, rising a lot, going down a little since October 7th. But, you know, the resolve of the Israeli people has been implacable throughout. The problem is that we have also a lot of nuisances on the ground in Israel because you have a very restive leftist minority has been trying to undermine the stability of the government, for the year and a half before October 7th. And then with a short respite of about 3 or 4 months at the beginning of the war, they went back to trying to overthrow the government. The Knesset ends its summer session today, and they had been desperately trying to overthrow the government before July 31st in order to instigate, according to our election thing, if a government falls, then within 3 months you have to have elections. They were hoping to have elections before November 5th, before the American elections. They failed on that. The government has survived the summer session of the Knesset, but they called for a civil rebellion last Saturday night. And so we've been facing a lot of different kinds of unrest that's been instigated by the left in and out of positions of power in Israel's bureaucracy for the past, since Netanyahu came back from the United States. So that we have this incredible, implacable resolve, and then we have these leftists on the ground who are trying to stop it. I think that what we saw on Tuesday in Beirut and in Tehran again, is it going to act to stabilize the political situation in Israel still further, perhaps expand the coalition, the governing coalition? But certainly it's going to have a good impact. People understand the risks, but they also understand that, you know, we've been at risk. We've been at war. It's important to be on offense. It's important to restore Israel's position. It's our deterrent power and also the fear in the hearts of our enemies of what awaits them if they don't capitulate to Israel for a change, with the United States, of course, pushing Israel to capitulate to them. Now they're more under the gun to stand down against Israel and to accept our demands. So that's very, very important.
Well, it remains a very volatile situation, one that here in the United States, not only are we standing with and supporting the Israeli people and their right to defend themselves, but praying for the peace of the land of Israel, as Christians, as the scripture instructs us to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We're praying each and every day. Carolyn Glick, I want to thank you for joining us. As always, very much appreciate your insight.
Oh, it's always a joy to be on your show, and thank you again for your prayers and for your love for Israel. We feel it and we appreciate it very much, Tony, and to all of your audience.
All right, and it's not going anywhere. We're going to remain steadfast. And, folks, I want to encourage you, if you've not yet signed that petition, calling upon all presidential candidates to stand with Israel. Simply text the word support to 67742. As I said, this is an ongoing, volatile situation. Much prayer needed. We're out of time for today, but I want to thank you for joining us. And until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6. Where he says, you've done everything you do when you prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.